Culture as a change agent is, again, probably not something that's very common today. But I think 20 years from now, it'll be far more common, not just in private equity, but in the business world at large.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to The Safari. This is Morty Singer. This week, we have something a little different. We're bringing you a recording of a podcast that I did with Alex Rawlings of the Private Equity Podcast. And Alex interviews people across the private equity landscape, a little bit like I do across the consumer landscape, talking about best practices and different approaches. And we had a really great discussion about the Traub Capital Partners approach, our culture, positivity minus ego equals trust, and many other elements of business building and how to approach team building and many other cross-functional elements that we sort of instill into our philosophy here at Traub Capital, but also hopefully within our companies. So it's fun and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Raw Selection Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Morty Singer, co-managing partner at Traub Capital Partners, private equity firm investing exclusively in the consumer industry. Welcome, and thank you very much for sharing your insights, Morty.
Alex, it's great to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
So, Morty, if you could give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
Sure. I, as you can hear from my voice, come from across the pond, a little bit like you, I'd imagine. And I've been here my whole career, really. And I started my career in banking, JP Morgan, and then joined the late Marvin Traub and his firm. And I've been basically at this company ever since, 20 years this year, actually. And about 7 years ago, we created the private equity firm, which is called Traub Capital Partners, which is sort of the sister company of Traub Consulting. And the two companies sit side by side. They are sister companies. I spend most of my time, if not all of my time, at Traub Capital now. But we wanted to leverage the big tent, the brand, the name, the history, and use our secret sauce, hopefully, to add some top spin to great companies that we buy.
Excellent. 20 years at one private equity firm. That's previously was more common, less common certainly now. So congratulations for sticking out in one firm and obviously progressing up through it. What's one mistake that you see either private equity firms or portfolio companies making? What actions would you suggest to correct them, please?
So, I mean, I think one of the major mistakes that I think, I'll start with portfolio companies, but it applies to, I think, anyone in business. And I think it comes down to the same thing with GPs vis-a-vis their LPs, is an impulse to have a lack of transparency. And one of the things that we work on very heavily in our first 100 days with our portfolio companies is to try and get them to a place to be comfortable with that sort of vulnerability of being able to communicate openly with us. And hopefully we do the same thing with our stakeholders as well. Because ultimately, if we're a specialist firm, you'd hope that we're actually involved, right? We're not just showing up, we're actually being invited in to the discussions. And if you can imagine, if you're a C-suite executive at one of these portfolio companies and you have a problem on the one hand, or you have an opportunity that you don't have the ability or the resources to unlock, calling the sponsor or the private equity firm to say, I don't know how to do it, you might feel, oh my God, does that make me look weak? When indeed, if they do reach out and they do seek our help, support, thinking, for us, it's ultimately the That's the alchemy, the nirvana of the relationships we try to build, because together, the sooner we can unlock an opportunity or fix a problem, obviously the better it is. And so trying to nurture that relationship very, very quickly, we spend a lot of time and money actually on trying to build those relationships and make sure that everyone is on the same page. So therefore, I guess the mistake is, you know, people throwing up walls, and we try to make sure there aren't any.
How do you break down? You mentioned the spend of time and money on that. What actions are you taking to limit the walls, break down the walls?
So I think there are a few things. There are a lot of it is collateral material. I mean, it starts with a culture deck, which we have. It's not a deck. It's like a tome. It's like a piece of literature, and we sort of package it that way so that it feels and very powerful and substantial, and that it talks about who we are and how we show up. There's also an onboarding kit about what we expect from them and how they should expect to use us and how it's a two-way street. There's also a multimedia kit with interviews with our various portfolio company leadership members, with us getting content from them as to examples and case studies of things that happened in their lives with us that we handled together, so that there are real live examples of people in portfolio companies working together with us to fix things early on and often. And I think it's those kinds of actions that I think will eliminate the walls. Obviously, there's always going to be tension is not necessarily the right word, but there's going to be some friction around them truly wanting to share everything all the time. We hope to get there as quickly as possible. And I think it's some of those tools that really get us there quicker, maybe than most.
It's really, really interesting how you've built kind of tools and processes. And are you sharing this as a differentiating element to the firm during, obviously, an acquisition of a business? Is this something that comes in post? I'm going to guess you probably communicate this throughout.
Yes, it's interesting. If you think about the kinds of companies we buy, we're in the consumer industry. We tend to buy businesses that are quite established. They've been around for decades. They have not been around for years and venture capital fueled. They're family owned often. They're either a corporate orphan or family owned. The majority of them are family owned businesses. When we show up to meet them, we end up talking to them operator to operator, not as financier to operator. And we end up finishing each other's sentences. And when they learn about culture and our culture-led and engaged approach, they open up to us. And what's really interesting is how it's given us an edge, I think, in management presentations. It's given us an edge in building relationship. And hopefully, when push comes to shove, and if we're in a process, which sometimes we are, someone may pick us over someone else based on the fact that if they want to roll with us, roll an equity participation, which we encourage, that they think that not only their investment will flourish with a group like ours, but their team members will flourish in a new era for the next period under our ownership. And I think if you think of the types of families that own companies, they also forge relationships and close bonds with those people who help them get there, right? They've got, you know, financial people and marketing people and sales people and operating people, and they build bonds with them, and they often treat them like family. And so how those people end up, where they land, where those people land means a lot to people. So it is about the money. Of course, they want to get the highest price for their company, but it's not always the most, not always the only driving factor. There are other things that go into it. So we want to make sure that people feel that we're a good home, the company they've built over the decades.
So culture is a really interesting one. It's what I regard as most recruiters, people in my world, talk mystics around it and don't really get an understanding. They ask you what your culture's like, you tell them it's fast-paced and moving forward. But it's really interesting you guys have delved into that level of depth. And something prior to the podcast, coming on here, Morty, was obviously poking around and having a look at the firm, yourself. And so I've reviewed thousands of private equity websites, and you're the first company that I've ever seen culture as a main header in the menu section. So you've given us a little bit of the story around why culture, and I completely agree on that concept. It's my kind of perspective is, I speak with thousands of private equity, or spoken with thousands of private equity firms across Europe and North America. And when they ask me, what's the difference at Royal Selection and why are we different, what's our USP? I ask them back, what's your USP as a private equity firm, and specialization and everything else is not a USP because everyone else is doing that. Something I want to talk to you about as well. Why did you go down the culture route, and what led you down that area? Because for me, it's the only genuine differentiation of any private equity firm anywhere, because anybody else can invest capital, can be a specialist, can hire people from investment banking or consulting or from expert place. Culture's difficult to define. Why did you go down that route of differentiation?
So, you know, culture, people think of it as one of the soft sciences. It's actually an incredibly hard thing to accomplish and to codify. There are technology platforms that we use to help codify what culture is happening, not just within a portfolio company, but within a division of that portfolio company. So, you know, we have an ongoing and rolling ability to see how teams are performing, how they are flourishing or not, and what a sinking culture within a division could actually have a net effect on the whole company. If there's a bad manager in pick a silo, the cross-functional effect of that team being dragged down can have a very negative effect on the entire company. Because if it's the operations division, for example, you know, you can have the great best sales team in the world, but if you can't get the products made and out the door, then because the team is unhappy or unwell or not flourishing, there are issues there. So we use technology to codify and monitor how people are doing. And then if that is not, if they're not well, trying to intervene quickly. And often, I think culture is important to us because it's about people. The word company comes from the French word compagne, which is an ally, a friend, right? So if you are a group of people together, trying to ally with each other with one end in mind, you need those people to have a clear view of what they're supposed to be doing together, where they are going. What does the enterprise need such that the team can flourish? And then as a result of that, the individual can have a fulfilling experience. And it's really in that order. It's enterprise first, team second, and the individual last. It's putting everyone else first. There's a humility to that action, right? It's if everyone's thinking about number one, then ultimately the company can't flourish. So what we believe in is team building. It's organizational structure, organizational design, coming into a company and often breaking what is historically in a family-owned business, a hub and spoke management approach. So think of a hub and then many spokes coming off of it. The owners, the family of said business are at the hub, and the spokes report into the family. You know, all roads lead to Rome. And oftentimes the spokes don't speak to each other in that kind of system. We spend a lot of time and effort breaking the hub and spoke, creating the cross-functional hierarchical team, and then being able to allow that team to flourish and design the strategy and then the tactics to execute that strategy with our assistance. And so with people at the core and bringing coaches in and team builders, which some people think that's, what is that? That's HR fluff. No, it's not HR fluff. Today, there is a real mechanism available and content available and resources available to do these things. And if you invest behind them, the sustainability and therefore the risk mitigation of one's capital inside these businesses, we believe is very, very powerful. So culture to us is a, you know, we say return on culture. How do we codify the return on culture, the ROC? And it's by investing in these pieces of content, these platforms, these technologies to allow us to de-risk an investment. And it's a financial metric. This is something that we think is, you know, return on investment is one thing, but return on cultural investment is yet another. And I think that's something that we intend to continue to lean in on and drive. In fact, there was a case study done by the Harvard Business School on Trapp Capital's acquisition of Signature Brands and how we used culture as a change agent. Culture as a change agent is, again, probably not something that's very common today, but I think 20 years from now, it'll be far more common, not just in private equity, but in the business world at large.
So I think we could unpack a lot here, Morty. I'm going to try and focus on some focus questions. Culture in each portfolio company is obviously going to be different. Do you have, and it sounds like we've got a playbook, which I'm a big advocate of, and every PE firm in the world should be. Do you have a playbook that you put into every firm, and does that have to be adapted depending on the business, the industry, the people? How does that kind of play out?
So look, we have certain values that we care about. We care about people's families and their lives outside of work. We care about the alchemy of the left and the right brain. We care about curiosity, being open-minded to what's going on outside of our echo chambers, right? So being open to new ideas and looking over the horizon and around corners. We care deeply about being honest, honesty, openness with each other, with our portfolio companies, so that we're not having difficult conversations and shouting at each other, and we're not making statements and banging tables. We're asking questions of each other, and so that together we can have an honest conversation. And then obviously integrity. Integrity is thrown around a lot, but delivering on what you say you think you can do and intend to do. And that's ultimately a very powerful thing. And that starts with organizational design, because if you claim to do something and say you're going to do something, having the ability and the team members and the colleagues to deliver on that promise is part of it too. So it's not just on the individual, it's on the team. So I think those five buckets are a code that applies to any company. Now, we have our culture. Positivity minus ego equals trust is the algebra of our culture. P minus E equals T. Positivity means you show up and you smile and you try and get everyone on the same page. No ego is humility. You know, get rid of put your ego in your pocket, stop banging the table, stop, making statements so that you're the genius, and let everyone else have a voice in the room. And together again, you'll get there. And when you do, that's when that trust really starts to cement. And we look for some of those things in our portfolio companies. Some of the companies we've acquired have had very little culture, and we've had to really start from a white canvas. Others have had a very distinct culture, which kind of mirrored our own, which was great. So it doesn't mean that, we won't get involved with companies that have a cultural, I guess, wasteland, as it were. But we find it very difficult, though, to find, to back companies that I would say are steeped in a very toxic and environment. That's very hard to change. If there's no culture and a great culture, that's fine. But having to try and fix a very, very toxic culture is something that we would stay away from, and indeed would be I would think a pillar, an investment pillar of our thesis as well.
Sorry to interrupt here. Just a quick note to highlight our new sponsor, Grata. The private equity market is rapidly shifting to a data-driven, proprietary deal sourcing standard. Grata provides the window into over 7 million middle market private companies. Contact Grata so you can access the market first. Request a demo at www.grata.com. Now back to the podcast.
Interesting having such a focus on culture and that uniqueness that it creates. And I know that there'll be people listening going, yeah, but it's not as easy. I'm sure that's, be somebody claiming it's fluff and whatever else. And everyone's entitled to their opinion. But
indeed, I'm used to that. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's our cross to bear. Yeah.
But I'm going to have it a guess. I'm sure you're not going to say no to this, but I'm going to have a guess that this makes you a more attractive private equity firm from a founder perspective of they've got something different here. And does this drive inbound opportunities for you, or at the very least drive a level of, okay, tell me a bit about that, because everyone else is just talking about capital and the fact that they've got, John used to be a CEO of a similar business 10 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, so I think it absolutely drives top of the funnel deal flow. People come to us, people think of us as an operator led mindset, a business builder mindset. And especially for those people who don't want to sell outright, people who want to stick around for another period and roll, very attractive. I also think it gets us a little bit of top spin on conversion. I mean, as I said earlier, it gets us really into the running in a way that, frankly, an early stage emerging manager such as ourselves probably shouldn't necessarily have been able to pull off some of the deals we did, frankly. They were big deals, and two deals were, twice the size of as advertised, the deals we hoped to do. And it was because, of the relationship we built and the trust that they put in us and when they rolled with us. So I think that it's something that is hard, yes, but it's very achievable. But it has to be approached scientifically. You can't just show up with a nice little booklet and wave it in their faces and say, hey, we really nice people. It's not about being nice people. It's about being careful. It's about being mindful. It's about having respect for people and even respect in the hardest conversations. It's not like we're not making difficult choices here. We have to go into companies and make tough calls. And when things need to be done, sometimes people have to obviously be laid off. But it's also how you make cuts to businesses, how you transition people out with dignity and respect. And I think the other thing that does is that how you treat someone that is going out the door will also land very well with the people who remain, because they will feel, you know what, that's how I'm going to be treated if, should, God forbid, that happened to me. And I think it's really about treating people as humans, and not as numbers on an org chart. And that's worked very well for us so far.
Reminds me of the Gary Vaynerchuk mantra of treat people as well on the way in, treat people as well on the way out as you do on the way in. I think that's an interesting...
Well, I call myself a disciple of his, and I couldn't agree more. And he has this whole thing about kindness and how you treat people. And I'm a full subscriber to that approach. And it's, again, it's really interesting. If you talk to Wall Street probably is a little insecure about some of these words, right? About kindness and culture. And does it make you look weak? And I would argue no. If you're able to have the tough conversations or the honest conversations, most people hide from them and they get someone else to do the dirty work. If you can do it yourself and look someone in the eye and tell them what they need to hear, whether it's about the fact that you're not happy with the performance or you're not happy with them personally and they may have to be let go, then I think that actually builds a lot of respect, and it's a very hard thing to do, and it takes some courage. And I think a specialist firm like ours that has a cadre of partners, but also colleagues that have run companies before, we have a different approach, a different ability to be able to do that. And we think that's where our differentiation lies.
It's a hell of a differentiation, Morty, I really do. I mean, I could talk all day about culture, and certainly something we've spent a lot of investment as well on internally of how do we drive and develop that. You've certainly done a better job than we have on quantifying that. And I'm truly impressed by how you're using that as a differentiator that I think is the only real differentiator in private equity in its true sense, beyond 1,000 years as a brand or whatever else. Private equity's not really been around that long. So just looking at your investment thesis, you've gone down the specialization route, which again is something I champion both internally with how we operate, private equity recruitment specialists, and then specialists in niches of that, but within the private equity world of people being specialists. Was that how the firm began? And why the specialization in consumer businesses?
So the company is 30 years old, and I joined it 20 years ago, and we created the private equity firm 7 years ago. Okay. And we have always been a specialist in the consumer industry, and we run people's businesses for them on the consulting side of the house. It is a platform. Frankly, many other private equity firms engage the consulting business to help optimize their portfolio companies. And I would say to the late Marvin Traub, who that's why his name is on the door. It was his name at the company at the beginning. And we honor him by keeping it there because of how he approached businesses. But I would say to him, look, we have a portfolio of companies. We don't own them, but we look after them. We manage them. We oversee them on behalf of ownership. Why don't we start a private equity firm? And God bless him, at the time he was 87 years old. And he said, look, I'm not picking green bananas. Thank you very much. So you guys can have at it one day when I'm gone. But the thesis came from taking the approach and the mindset and the abilities that I learned and Jeff Lurie learned at the consulting side of our house and applying it to, you know, owning the companies ourselves. And so Brian Crosby came and joined us. We wanted that third equal partner in the trio. I'm the revenue guy. I'm the strategic arrow, as it were. Jeff is the optimizing arrow. He's a serial optimizer of companies. He was the CEO of the North Face and turned that around and sold it to VF Corp and many other companies like it. So he takes all the good work we do at the top line and he brings it to the bottom line. And Brian Crosby is a bona fide, dyed-in-the-wool private equity executive who has been doing this his whole career in consumer. So we care about certain kinds of consumer businesses, and not just any consumer business. We like businesses that have been around for many years, as I told you before. But if you were to think of our portfolio companies, each of them as airplanes with two wings, there are two things keeping those planes in the air, right? The air under each wing, one of them is the enthusiast consumer, and the other thing is a powerful brand. And the enthusiast consumer does two things. The enthusiast consumer cares about the activity that they love and that your service or product provides to them into their life. And we like them because they're sticky. They stay with you. If you're giving them the right service, they don't just switch out. I don't know if you play tennis, if you have a tennis racket, you probably had the same brand of tennis racket your whole life. It's the same thing with golf. So ultimately, yes, there's competition, but in the areas that we focus, that loyal customer is very important. The other thing they do is that they tell their friends about you. So your marketing costs go down. So it's quality hyper-efficiency is a fancy way of saying a word of mouth. And there's a ratio in consumer investing, which is LTV to CAC, lifetime value divided by CAC, customer acquisition cost. And you want to have that ratio be the number to be as high as possible. Your LTV is longer with an enthusiast consumer, and your CAC is lower because they tell everyone about you. They evangelize on your behalf. So that's one of the wings. The other wing of the airplane is the brand. We don't buy companies that have unknown brands that are... The companies we buy have brands that have been around for decades. They are in the collective subconscious of the consumer. They are businesses that are perennial in nature, that consumers come back to them year over year for whatever reason, because either they're an enthusiast consumer or it's an activity that is required and we are the dominant player in that activity. We own, for example, the Betty Crocker dessert decorating business. Birthdays come every year. Halloween comes every year. Christmas and Thanksgiving come every year. And we sort of power American celebrations that are perennial. So those brands that are powerful and those enthusiast consumers, in that case, are young parents and families that want to get their children around the kitchen table for a tradition, a quite affordable tradition, actually. It doesn't cost much money to bake a cake or a brownie or a cookie. And so we power that for the American consumer. And I think those two sides of our strategy are incredibly powerful for de-risking, yet again, an investment into the consumer industry.
Answer again shows the depth of the investment thesis. Not just we invest in consumer businesses, we invest in businesses with brands, this criteria, that criteria. I think that's really, really interesting what you've built there. Another, pulling out all your unique selling points here, Morty, but another interesting thing that I obviously researched about you is that you have your own podcast, obviously a big advocate of podcasts, hence this. What inspired, well, firstly, I think you might, there's two or three private equity firms I know that have podcasts, but not of the size that you have. And the content world's only just beginning from a private equity driving media, driving content. What inspired you guys to do the podcast and what benefits have you seen from it?
Well, as a consumer brand expert, I believe that we are in the age of being one's own influencer. You need to put yourself out there. You need to network. You need to tell your story. And the best part about having our own podcast now for 5 years is that I use it as a networking tool. I meet people, I meet great CEOs, they share the interview with their relationships, so they get to know about us. And I use it as a reference tool when I meet people. So for me, I love it if lots of people listen, and they do, which is quite gratifying. But really, my use case for it is when I meet a CEO of a company that I'm really interested in, I tell him, look, you might be interested in my conversation with Johnny Smith over there because he was in a similar situation to you at one point and the conversation might be interesting to you. So I kind of use it strategically as an introduction to who I am and to my way of thinking. And it's really helpful and I've enjoyed it. So as you know, it takes work, but it's quite fulfilling once you get on the other side of organizing yourself.
Yeah, once you kind of build enough steam to then have somebody else to organize it for you, tends to be my real benefit on that one because it's fairly time intensive and getting these things off the ground. But once you've done a few, it all plays into itself. What do you love about private equity and what do you dislike about it?
I love business building. we are builders at heart. We enjoy supporting people and teams. We have creative juices and we love being able to deploy them in service of our companies. We enjoy and get excited about the opportunities that we feel we can uncover for our portfolio companies and help drive change. And, you know, quite frankly, that's how private equity started. You know, Brian Crosby, my partner, was trained by Mr. Kohlberg of Kohlberg and Company, one of the godfathers of the industry. Obviously, he was one of the founders of KKR and went off on his own, as everyone knows. But he wasn't the old school approach. Let's back good companies. Let's back good people. Let's support them and lift them. And financial engineering is something that came later. And I'm not suggesting that we don't use structure and we don't do fancy footwork of our own when it comes to structure and corporate finance. But I would say, you know, the lion's share of our strategy is business building, which we love and harkens back to the origin story of private equity. And actually, that's probably the thing I don't like about private equity is how misunderstood it is. It's two words that strike fear into the hearts of portfolio companies when they are being acquired, because the brand of private equity, I think, has been tarnished over the decades. And I like the idea that there is an ability for us and others to bring back the brand of private equity to what the origin story was, as evidenced by Mr. Kohlberg and his teams back in the 80s and 90s and beyond, to really go back to basics and to back teams. And I think that's something that for me is, what would I like to get out of my career? I'd like to be successful and return lots of money to our investors. But I would also like to think that we were able to make a change in the perception of, in one small way, one drop in the ocean, but maybe there'll be other drops in that ocean that follow us, as to how to use culture, use team building, use organizational design and structure to de-risk and stand up great teams that can deliver great returns.
What are your influences, Morty? What do you read, watch, listen to that you would recommend that others check out?
I'm a big student of the Stoics. So I like all the references of Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus and Seneca. No, I do not sit down and read the classics because they're very difficult to get through. But I am a disciple of Ryan Holiday, who's, I guess, the 21st century Stoic. And he's got many books, The Daily Stoic being one of them. The Obstacle is the Way. Ego is the Enemy. These are all books that he has written that I have read and give out as gifts a lot. And I listen to his podcast. So that's one thing that I would highly recommend. I'd also recommend, we touched on him, following Gary Vaynerchuk, who is, I think, just a wonderful thinker of how the world is changing. And then I love Professor Galloway. Scott Galloway is a professor at NYU Stern Business School. He's the professor of marketing, He has two podcasts, one of which is The Prof G Show, and the other one is Pivot, which he does with Kara Swisher. I listen to both of those every week. And it's just a kind of a wonderful view of the world. So yeah, I mean, that's just a few of them, I guess. I could go on, but I won't bore you with that.
Excellent. I appreciate that insight. If anybody wishes to reach out to you, Morty, post this podcast, how best do they get in touch with yourself, please?
My email is on our website, but msinger@trabcapitalpartners.com. And we'd love to meet people, love to have people on the podcast, and really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Perfect. Well, we'll definitely put that in the show notes. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the insight here, Morty. You've given us lots to think about, lots of private equity investors to think about, and lots of portfolio executives to consider of how they're running their organizations, and certainly that huge piece focusing around culture and how we're driving that. So thank you very much for coming on and sharing your insights.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks so much for having me.
And as always, thank you very much for everybody listening, for joining us. Should you ever need support with your private equity professional hiring or portfolio executive hiring, please do reach out to us at Raw Selection. If you've not done already, please do subscribe. You'll be notified of the next podcast, which comes out every 2 weeks. Until the next time, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.